here we are. This is Sex, Love, Psychedelics, and I'm your host, Dr. Kat, bringing you psychosexual conversations that will leave you intellectually turned on and hungry for more. Hey, lovers. It's wintertime and perfect to cozy up warm with your favorite cup of hot cocoa and some good juicy smut. Am I right? Well, I've got a good one for you today, and you can listen to it play out in your ears. Dipsy is an incredible erotic story app and audio POV boyfriends who will tell you what a good girl you've been. And you can have a free 30-day trial to whet your appetite with. The link for that is dipsystories.com/sexloveyoga. And I'll be sure to include that in the show notes for you. I'm just going to ask that you let me know what some of your favorite stories are or some of your favorite characters are. So be sure to leave me a review and share this with your favorite aunt who loves a good smut. Is that appropriate? I don't know. Do it for the plot. But before we get to Gina, I've got an upcoming retreat for you. We are going deep into the exploration of our psyche and our sensuality with ketamine. This is going to be an incredible retreat, unlike what you've ever experienced before. Learning about how to cultivate your relationship with your sensuality, with your eroticism, while swimming in the depths of your psyche to best understand the blocks that are in the way. And even more, you'll be a part of a community of fellow women like you who are on this path, which is the best way to cultivate lasting change. If you ask me, having community changes everything. I'm going to include the link in the bio to sign up for the waiting list. I cannot wait to talk to you more about it. Now to Gina Gutierrez, who is the co-founder of the app Dipsy, which is a people-powered story studio that produces a wide range of erotic, female-focused audio content. And it's super hot, let me tell you. So if you haven't heard of it, and I don't know where you live in the world if you haven't heard of it, but it's really sexy. So thank you so much for coming on, Gina. I'm excited to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
So I have interviewed a few erotic authors on this podcast, and part of it is because I'm obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. And I really believe in the power of erotica, you know, whether it's writing your own or listening to somebody else's or even watching somebody else's creation. Like, mm-hmm. there's something really powerful about, you know, using these as support for us to be able to reconnect to our own erotic nature or to our bodies, even, you know, like, many of us have mundane lives where we're just going to work and coming home and just, you know, doing the productive thing. but before Dipsy came on, you know, to start the whole interview there, did you have a favorite erotic author or director, or how did you nourish your eroticism?
Totally. This is a great question. I actually sat across the table at dinner this weekend from another founder who's been really successful in the food space. And I asked him what his like secret to success was. Mm. And he said, I wasn't an expert in the space. And so I wanted to try it my own way and see if I could do it. And that actually resonates a lot with my perspective on Dipsy, which was, I wasn't a romance reader. I wasn't like super steeped in that world. I wasn't a 50 Shades of Grey reader. Like I didn't know a lot of what the expectations people actually had in the space when I started Dipsy. And I think in some ways that was a really interesting place to start because we were like, okay, if we were to start from scratch, what would we do? And over the course of the last 5 years, my co-founder Faye has gotten super into romance. So she's like a total ACOTAR fangirl. She's like very immersed in both like the fantasy space and the kind of like Emily Henry space. Like she's everywhere. And it's been really interesting to see the ways that Dipsy, just by nature of us doing it our way, is different. Mm-hmm. And also all the ways that this stuff has been working forever because these stories are super classic stories of like, will they, won't they? And like, you know, secret passion and all these things that are just encoded in us as sexy. And so we're not inventing the wheel. We're kind of like reinventing the wheel. Mm-hmm.
At Dipsy. Yeah. Yeah, that's so interesting that you bring up some of those elements of what makes something sexy. You said, will they, won't they? What are some of the other themes that you see?
Yeah, a lot of it is, you know, there's some reason that we shouldn't be together. There's something that holds us back, right? And so, you know, when we think about like classic writing, we think about two characters and kind of like the plot that transpires, or three characters and the plot that transpires. At Dipsy, it's the same, but it's less the plot and more the emotional connection and what's happening between those two people. And so when we go to start writing a new series, we're like, okay, what is the core tension? What is the core desire, we call it, between those characters? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they're deeply misunderstood by other people. And so like, you're the one true person that can like understand who they are and see them in a different way. Maybe they see you that way and you're misunderstood by others. Like, what is that unique thing between you two that like creates the magic? And so it's almost like a third character between two people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I think Jack Moran wrote in his book, The Erotic Mind, about four cornerstones to sexual desire, things like violating prohibitions, power, the exchange of power. What were some of the other ones? Overcoming obstacles. Yeah. So I can hear that in some of the things that you're talking about here.
Yeah, and I think you'll hear that from people when they watch sexy shows or movies, where a lot of the sexiest scenes aren't necessarily sex scenes. They're actually like what happens before or what doesn't happen before. And so like, people were really, really into the Sally Rooney Normal People show that was done with Paul Mescal. Am I saying his name right? I just recently found out that I'm saying his name wrong. Paul Mescal. Uh-huh. And like, a lot of the eroticism there is like how he literally does or doesn't touch her shoulder. Like, that's what's really erotic about that. And so, you know, at Dipsy, we think a lot about that. Like, how do you do that in audio is a whole other game.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a tease factor, like building energy in this experience. Yeah. Not just giving the direct thing to you, but playing with the space in between.
Right. And that was a huge differentiator that we wanted to make between us and porn back in the day. We were like, we don't want to just give it to you right away. It's not like gratuitously here. Okay. Wham, bam, here it is. Uh-huh. It's actually like making you, you know, participate in the energetic buildup, like you said. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. Like turning bad frustration into really juicy, yummy frustration.
Totally. Totally.
How do you do that in stories? So like, are your stories long? Are they short? Do they vary? Because that's, you know, to really pull that out, I can imagine, or to build an emotional connection with characters, that would probably take some time, right?
Yeah. So our classic stories are pretty short. So they're between like 9 and 20 minutes. The average one is probably like, let's say 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so that's not a ton of time to get to know characters or to get to understand like what they like or struggle with or whatever their interactions. So what we do is we serialize the ones people love most. So we are a platform, we are an app that we can see what people are really responding to. And we also talk to users all the time. Mm. So when people fall in love with Jack and Gia or Hades and Persephone, we can respond to that pretty quickly. And in real time, we're always listening. And so if people are really loving those characters, we then have a preset like potential for an arc that we then keep living through it. So, you know, one episode quickly becomes 15 episodes. And so you have a whole arc of characters to enjoy. And what makes our writers and editors and producers so good at their jobs is that they're like, okay, even if this dynamic is something that people really like, classic romance, like you have an expectation of what you want it to be and you want that book to live up to that expectation. It's actually like not satisfying if you break it. It's like, I wanted X, why did I get Y? It's like a classic, like I hated that. And so we want to do that and meet people's needs and also surprise them enough that they're like delighted by the story. And that's pretty hard to do over 15 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes me so curious about the writer's process for this, you know, how to be able to be in that space. And then that brings up, you know, how does that influence the writer's life? Do you ever talk to them about, you know, their writing process and how that impacts their ability, you know, what happens in their relationships or their
sex life? You mean like in their personal lives?
Yeah.
You know, at Dipsy, we try and do a pretty good job of being like, if you want to volunteer information about your personal life, because it's like part of the brainstorm, you're so welcome to do that. But we're not like, hey, anyone have any fun stories to tell about their weekend that might influence the room? Like we really try and keep a little bit of a firewall there, because even though we talk about sex all day long and like the substance of our Slack messages and emails is like, would be insane to other people, it is still like within the context of like, we are writers writing stories for our users. And so we walk that line pretty delicately. It happens sometimes, but it needs to be volunteered.
Of course. It's just something that I wonder about, because I know for me, when I'm writing those stories, it's like I'm carrying the energy with me for the rest of the day. And it really does influence my own personal, you know, how I'm relating with a lover or with a partner, because they're getting to receive that spiciness in me. I'm like
right,
setting up like little scenes, and I'm creating like these little moments of, you know, like not giving it to them. But yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've been surprised and delighted that there's so many people who not only want to listen to our stories, but who also want to write and also want to voice act, because it's such a fundamentally creative and erotic act to make this work. Even if we're doing it in a professional context, like it is an erotic act, and you have to be tuned into people and you have to be tuned into energy to be able to do it really well. And so I get why people want to do it. And it's also really clear how hard it is to get this right. So like, you know, we care a lot about these stories feeling extremely high quality and like not losing you because you get the ick in one random moment. Like it's really delicate work. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten better at it because we've had now 5-6 years of becoming experts at it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of ways that you can really like lose people in that too. And so it's just really this like science meets art thing that mm-hmm. is really interesting. And it's been like so fun to see how that evolves over time. We hope that when people listen, they also feel that, right? Like, and we hear that from our listeners. It'll be like, I listened in the morning on my way to work. And then like later in the day on a date, I still carry that energy with me. So yeah. It's not necessarily like people are listening and self-pleasuring in that moment. That's like the only way to listen. Like people are definitely taking it into their day, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You bring up the word ick, the ick factor. And yeah. I think, you know, when it comes to fantasy or storytelling among, you know, between partners, that is the number one block for somebody. They're afraid that, you know, what they're saying or expressing or embodying is going to cause an ick or repulsion in another person. And so over the years of doing this work, what have been some of those icks, or can you remember what some of those common things were for people?
Totally. They range a huge, huge gamut. So some things we have more control of, like word choice, like where we've with enough repetition understood that certain words are less interesting to people or more icky to people, and some are more positive.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember some of those?
Yeah. So like, for example, when we're writing stories that are set back in time. So we like did a series that was in like the Regency era. Like, would they use anatomically correct language? Like, I want you to touch my clit. Like, they didn't know those words. Like, a woman didn't understand her own anatomy enough to label it a clitoris. So like, what are we talking about? Are we now using romance words? Like, are we calling it like my opening? Are we calling it like, what are we calling it? And yeah. So that's like a perfect example of like, okay, we're going to kind of venture into worlds that feel maybe older school than us because it feels right in this story. And then there's plenty of people who are like, oh my God, calling it an opening makes me feel so gross. Like, I hate that. That's fair. Like, there's not every story is going to work for every person. The best we can do is be like, this is a Regency story. It's, you know, an empowered woman, but at an olden time, and like, let people decide that it's the right story for them. Another one that's also hard to control for is like just tonal match. So if someone sounds tentative and the other person sounds full on, that's like a clear ick, where it's like someone's coming on too hard is like the classic one. But even like how two people respond to each other in a humor way can feel icky, right? If someone's like not like laughing in a way that feels authentic or embodied to the level of the joke that was given, can be really hard and be like, do these people even like each other? Like, what is their chemistry? And, you know, all of our actors are recorded independently. They're recorded in studios all over the country, all over the world. So they're not together looking each other in the eye when they're doing this. We're stitching it together in post-pro. So it's pretty incredible that the chemistry usually sounds like, wow, oh my God, these people are so into each other, because the reality of how it's made is so not like that, you know?
Yeah. Are they talking to each other at the same time, or are they like literally separate? No way.
Literally separate. Partly it's just because scheduling would make that really hard, but partly because the director is in their ear being like, okay, so why don't we do a take that's more like this? Like, can you try and make it sound more soft and breathy? Can you try and make it sound more outward? And they're doing reps on it. So our audio producers have like a better mental command of like flirt language, of sex language, of aftercare language than like, I swear, anyone on the planet.
Okay. So our audience right now listening, you know, these are some of the things that you need to pay attention to when you're creating your own fantasy or stepping into a role. This is really great. Any other ick factors or any other blocks that somebody might be keep aware of?
I think like lingering, if you're a writer and you're writing erotic lit, I would really focus on how you can basically edge the story and edge characters as long as possible, because that payoff is so much sweeter the longer that happens. And so if you can like create a wave and then soften the wave and create a wave and then soften a wave and create it and soften it several times and it feels right in your story, then you've just done something really special.
Mm-hmm. Same in sex, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just keep momenting. But not in a way that they drop and get bored. Like there's an art there of how to keep them engaged. What do you think contributes to that engagement or maintaining that rise and fall?
I think that's just the art of it. I think that's just creative people making choices that feel true and right to them.
Yeah. And maybe small satisfactions.
Mm-hmm, totally.
To build it up. Yeah. Or to give it and take it away.
She giveth and she taketh away.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm noticing even in my own self, you know, bring what this process is into people in real life and their relationships. I saw this Instagram, I don't know if it was Instagram reel or TikTok, and now they're all the same to me, but she was saying how she was cleaning her house and told her neighbor that she was clean, that she had just finished cleaning her house. And she said, you should tell me that I was a good girl. And then she like stopped herself and was like, oh my God, did that just come in out of my mouth? And then he was like, well, should I have told you that you were a good girl? And she was like, do you like that? And she was like, yes. And this was all like a very real story that she shared. And I'll be very honest. I have caught myself in saying stuff like that too.
Because it's in your head from listening. That's funny.
Right. Yeah. And do you hear stories from some of your guests, some of your audience of
listeners?
Yeah. Things like that.
I haven't heard like, oh, that's like been an earworm and I can't stop saying it. And like, it's put me in an awkward situation. Like maybe that's happened. Very possible. Uh-huh. But the stories that we hear are more like, it's like, it really matters to me that the partner is vocal in the bedroom. I didn't realize how much that mattered to me. Now I can kind of like coach my partner and give tips on what I want to hear. Because a lot of Dipsy, even though it's like not educational content, it just allows you to hear something that sounds so sexy that you're like, oh, that's what I want to hear. Mm-hmm. And so people have definitely told us that they've had conversations they never expected to have with their partners about being like, I didn't think I liked to be called good girl, but now I've heard it said by an Irish guy enough times. I'm like, no, this is working for me. And that's amazing. And like, you know, what are the lines of like more, intense or degrading language that feel really spicy versus that feel really like not okay. And like, everyone's going to have very different lines for that. And so if someone is interested in pushing those edges, Dipsy is a very safe place to be like, okay, it's tagged that way. I'm going to explore and listen like, whoa, I do like that. Or no, I know that that's the line for me. And it changes how people have sex IRL, which is just amazing for us to know that we're, you know, having that effect in people's real bedrooms.
Yeah. And I think that is a form of education. It's education through transmission. When you get a reference point of how something can be, now it's in your head of possibility, right? Where totally. Otherwise we don't have that.
It's modeling, right? Like it's like, you know, the best way arguably to learn. And recently my co-founder and our amazing kind of like social marketing brand person have put a lot of videos up that are kind of targeted at straight men, which is not our audience. Like Dipsy's audience is definitely not targeting straight men because they've got the whole internet for them. But we've been like talking about how listening to Dipsy stories can really be a clue into what women want, what they want to hear. Mm-hmm. And it's been really cute to see some app store reviews come in from guys who are like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, this is like not reading like a weird blog post about like 18 ways to get consent. Right. This is like, oh, this is what consent can really sound like. And it actually can sound like dirty talk. It can sound sexy. It can sound like cool. And that's so cute. Like what an amazing thing.
Yeah, that's really important. I get that question asked a lot in the programs that I run of people asking about not realizing that consent can be sexy.
Yeah.
And having consent has become such a very intellectual concept that's very heady, but not necessarily like embodied in
a sense.
So
well said. It has become super, super like abstract or something.
Yeah. So you're hearing men also learning about, you know, around sex here. Yes, there's such a big space for porn and erotica, or I don't even know if it would be called erotica, but porn that's directed towards straight heterosexual men, but it's not necessarily ethical or healthy or, you know, contributing to, I guess, the ways that our bodies naturally function, both for men and for women. So I think this is really important to include them. I don't know. What's your demographic like for Dipsy?
Our demographic is overwhelmingly people who identify as women. Okay. It's like 90% women. And then I want to say it's like 10% non-binary. Mm-hmm. That leaves a really small percentage of men. Basically, it's like, let's say like 2% of paying listeners are men. Mm-hmm. I need to actually make that math out, but something mm-hmm. like that. And that makes sense. I mean, our content is like overwhelmingly from the perspective of someone who's in a largely described as female body. And like, that's been intentional because we feel that that audience is so, so deeply underserved. And we definitely have content that's like her plus them or them plus them content. It's a smaller part of the library, but it's growing. Yeah. That said, I think like kind of like how Bumble talks about like taking a female first approach to dating can actually like really influence dating for everyone and have a better impact on men as well. Like that's mm-hmm. definitely how we see it with Dipsy. So it's less that we want to create like a exclusive experience and more that we want to create an experience that's really clear about who could benefit the most and then hope that that effect kind of radiates out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really beautiful. Do you ever feel like, or, you know, it, again, coming back to this idea of porn, and I think one of the more common arguments about porn is that it creates unrealistic expectations, whether with the story or with the sex itself and how, you know, sex functions there. Do you see audio erotica contribute to that, or how do you see that in relationship?
It's a great question. We think that we've taken a little bit of like a tough job on, which is it's hard to be moral arbiters in a world as like gray as sex, right? Like, you know, like is a rape fantasy a dangerous fantasy or is that an acceptable fantasy? Like those are like really complicated questions that we have kind of participated in only by omission, right? So like there aren't rape fantasies, for example, on Dipsy. That's a choice that we've made. We're mm-hmm. not necessarily saying that we think that that's like patently wrong. We just haven't figured out a way to make that work inside of our ecosystem of what our content is. And so like, these are really, really challenging questions that no one is going to think we have 100% gotten right, but we take a lot of care and we think a lot about how to kind of participate positively in the world of sexuality, knowing that what people watch, listen to, experience will impact the world. That's just true. Mm-hmm. So that's been like a really interesting line to walk. And so some of the things that we just decided is like sex positivity is going to be written into our stories as much as we can. So things mm-hmm. like abstracting bodily forms is a big way of doing that. Like you want to know how the bodies are lining up so you can imagine the sex, but we're not like her enormous breasts, like, right? Like we're not like being super, super clear about bodies because you want to be able to put yourself in the story, which porn has never allowed people to do.
Yeah.
And that can be really off-putting. It can be really othering. It can feel really upsetting. Mm-hmm. You know, another thing we do is we make sure that consent is a part of the story, but also in as natural ways makes sense. So if you're like episode 15 of a monogamous couple, then like consent can be much more like a mm-hmm than like a, can I do this with you now? Or like, there's like such subtler ways that we can do this that feel natural and native, even though they're always part of the story, and safe sex is part of that too. Like, are you hearing someone rustle a condom because it's a first date story? Like, absolutely you are. Is everyone picking up on that in the heat of the story? I'm not sure, but it is in there. Mm-hmm. So those are like these subtle choices that in our experience, when we first started Dipsy, like porn was not paying attention to. Yeah. And we do not like monolithically believe that porn is bad, but obviously there is a lot of bad porn. And we wanted to be so clear that this is like so obviously something different, partly because the ethicality isn't even in question. Like there aren't people who are in environments being asked to have sex with one another to make this content. It's actors and voice booths. And that takes out so much of the complexity of vulnerable environments and vulnerable people. We want to make this feel like people are listening and they're like not having any of those thoughts at all. And that can be very freeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. I once was with a partner and I was like, let's watch porn together. And then he pulled up Pornhub and I felt this visceral contraction in my body. And I was like, I can't get out of my head. We didn't even like get our downloads. I was like, I can't get out of my head. I don't know that this is ethical. And then I was going down.
You're like, I know this is my idea, but I changed my mind. Revert.
Well, in that sense, I you know, shared some of my favorite directors, and Erica Lust was one of my first ones who turned me on to ethical porn. But I don't think many people stop to consider whether something is ethical. Maybe you can share what people can look for that would help them to know whether this is sourcing it from a place that is ethical.
Totally. So number one, autoerotica. Please listen to Dipsy. It is a safe space for you. But besides that plug, if you're watching like graphic visual porn, then the number one way that you can ensure that's ethical is whether you're paying for it. Mm. Overwhelmingly, people do not pay for porn. And so that just gives you a glimpse into how dangerous the space is and how unclear that is. So Erica Lust, you are paying for. That's paid for content.
Yes.
And that already is a different world where, like, if you are directly funding the payment of, you know, creators, contributors, and sex workers, then you're already in a very different universe than the vast majority of the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you have any other directors that you really like or that you...
Yeah. Not necessarily. I think audio has always been the medium that I'm most interested by, and I've stuck to that lane.
Yeah. What do you think it is about the audio aspect of it?
Yeah. So, you know, 6 years ago when Faye and I were first concepting what Dipsy could be, Headspace was really taking off, Calm was really taking off. And we just realized that these apps were using audio, not just to like share information like a podcast, but they were like changing how you felt. So you would listen in the morning and meditate. And like, ideally you'd take that calm with you throughout the day. And that like feeling, that idea that audio can create feeling, was just very exciting to me. And then the more I thought about it, it's like audio is this amazing trifecta in that it's super immersive. So it helps you to feel like you have to do some work to imagine, and therefore you're less distracted by what's around you or distracted by your own thoughts. Like you can really like be in it. It's fundamentally imaginative. So like you are deciding what the room looks like. You are deciding what the bed is like. You are deciding what the characters look like. You are deciding whether you want to put yourself in there or be the voyeur. Like you get to do that yourself. And then lastly, it's so intimate. And the best way that I can say this, it's like audio is the closest we can come to hearing our own thoughts. It's like how we process our own thoughts. So it feels so personal. Any story that you listen to, you're going to have a different experience than I would have.
Yeah.
And that just feels, like beautiful, for lack of a better word, you know, like really erotic.
Yeah. And I love to hear your sensory experiences there as you're talking about this, because I think one of the big arguments around fantasy, or it was when I was, especially when I was first starting studying Tantra like 10 years ago, was, you know, fantasy gets you in your head. But here you're talking about these very sensory experiences that, you know, our bodies can respond to.
It's a really good point. I think that we often say at Dipsy that we wanted to take this like mind first approach to sexuality because we felt that women were really getting shorthanded by not having tools that attention to the fact that sex is such a mental experience. Like you can hand someone a vibrator and be like, go to town, and like, you can have pleasure, but you're not necessarily like solving the problem that people have more broadly in their lives, which is like, we hear this over and over. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I enjoy sex as much as I should. I don't know if my libido is high enough. Maybe something's wrong with me. Do I like my partner? Or do we have the right chemistry? Like people are so concerned because there's not a lot of information sharing. It's all kind of behind a veil that they're like normal and that things are okay. And so story is such a powerful kind of like anecdote or a antidote to a lot of that, right? It like takes it out in the open and it helps you like hear what it could be. And it helps you tune into your own mind. And then it's not just purely a heady experience that like lets you tap into your body because you feel safe, because you feel calmed down, because you feel present. And so, yeah, it's like, those systems are like always working together.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And we, many of the world spends most of their time in their head first. So it's like starting there to bring it down. Yeah. And especially like, I'm thinking of, you know, so many, I primarily work with individuals who've experienced sexual trauma. So their bodies were not a safe place to be. And so imagining that that would be like a more accessible step for them to access their body rather than to go cold straight into the body.
That's exactly right. And some of the feedback that we hear that I feel most touched by is people who are sexual assault survivors who are like, you know, I kind of thought that my options were just to like get okay. And then I was supposed to just stay at okay versus like first get okay. And then remember the joy and pleasure possible. And that there's like a next step. You don't just have to linger at like good enough or linger at okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or jump straight to body love to recognize that there's a whole process in between there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. From your stories, I know we're just like jumping around and this, some of your stories, cause I've listened to them, are plot filled, exciting, like passionate, you know, like these stories of meeting a stranger or meeting somebody. And it makes me wonder, do any of your listeners share stories about whether that's impacted their decision-making process in sex or relating, dating? Like, do they make spicy decisions or decisions that might not be as smart, logical?
I don't know if it's like that they're not as smart, but it's like, you know, here's a classic thing that we hear. It's like, I post-pandemic was feeling like really meh and like wasn't in my body. And like, you know, we all had some version of like, we first were super, super sex forward in the beginning of the pandemic. It's like, look at all this time on my hands. And then it's like, oh my God, I feel so bad and lost in my body. And then like, that was universal. We had so many people that then really struggled to get back into the dating world where like moving from like Hinge chat to IRL felt super, super intimidating, especially if you had some revelation during that time, like your emerging queerness. Yeah. And so we've heard a lot of people be like, oh my God, I like, don't feel like I have to go into this future dating life, especially if it's a queer dating life, feeling like I don't know anything, feeling like I don't know how I would show up, feeling like I don't know what I want to hear, what I would say. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing to hear, mm-hmm. That we're like helping people get out there, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was the other bit of your question? You're like, what other decisions do people make or like how do they, what they choose? Yeah. I think another is like how good, like what is my bar for partner? Like, how do I want to be treated? And like, how do I want to be loved and appreciated? Mm-hmm. And if, you know, my partner isn't, you know, making me feel worshipped, then that's like not the partner I want. That's something that's really important to me. And so like, we help people raise their bars for what they want.
Ooh, okay. I love that. And so my initial question was, and maybe I'll use myself as an example. Before this last relationship, I would sometimes make decisions just for the plot twist. And I was like, I know that this person isn't going to be my person, but I'm going to do it because it's spicy and we're going to make this like, for the plot.
Yeah. I wish I had a backlog of stories for you about that because that deeply hits. And like, I felt that in phases of my life. Like, thank God I have single friends to tell me about their plot twists because my married life is not giving me those right now. Only fiction, but it's true. Like sometimes you feel like you're in the middle of your own story. And like that, if you are a writer, for example, is like such fuel for you, right? Like you have like a visceral muscle memory, like a scent memory, a reality memory of like what that feels like. And like, that's when you need to be writing.
Absolutely. And I do. Okay. So this actually brings me into this question of recently I got compared to this other girl with the analogy of the Madonna and whore complex, which I'm sure you're familiar of. It's like the segmentation of something that's pure versus something that is more, sinful or salacious or hedonistic. Basically she was saying that she was more spiritual, that she was more on the spiritual path and I was on the hedonistic path. Hmm. So this idea came to my mind around like the, you know, this concept of hedonism is often, associated with the pursuit of pleasure without restraint. And I'm wondering from your perspective and all the stories and the, you know, what you promote around, women's sexual empowerment, how do you see that play out? Do you, your perspectives around hedonism or?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I feel protective of you that someone said that. Cause I feel like when you put people into false binaries, like it's never a good place to be. I think I notice that in myself, like when I'm in a place where like, I'm immediately like, it's either that or that I'm like, oh, I'm reactive right now. Like black and white is never the truth. So that's my first reaction to that. But
yeah,
I think
yeah.
Madonna whore is pretty like the most classic binary that exists. It's like either women are like, untouchable and perfect and have no personality, wants, desires, needs anything, or they're like an absolute like abyss of challenge and complication and sin. And like, that's just insane. Like that's like what men historically writing women have done. And we're past that now.
Are we though? Because I see it play out in sisterhood as well. You know, this like this natural segmentation of these parts.
Yeah, we're never over our most base inclinations as people, I don't think, but we are more aware of when they happen and we can call it out. And I think that's a huge part of the journey. And the second part of your question was like, how do I see that come up in stories, or how do I see that come up? Is that right?
Yeah. Or your perspectives around hedonism or healthy hedonism.
Yeah. Thanks for reorienting me. I think that hedonism is first of all, what a fun word. Love the word hedonism. Like, we have that on the back of all of our Dipsy sweatshirts. People ask all the time, like, what is that word? Like, and it's like, look up hedonism. It's a great word. I think that our philosophy at Dipsy is that helping people feel more in touch with what feels good is really powerful work. That's way bigger than sex. Mm-hmm. So for example, you mentioned like you went on Pornhub with a boyfriend at one point and you like felt like a visceral like pullback in your body. And like that kind of signal, I think, is so important. Like, you had a moment of recognizing that you had like, you were moving away from something versus moving towards something. And I think that we lose the signal and the noise of our like busy, but also mundane lives where we like grit through the day or are so hyper-stimulated by our emails and our partners and our kids or whatever. And like, we lose touch with what feels good, like down to the degree that there's certain friends you see and you're like, I'm glad I saw that friend. It like check the box versus like, I leave that friend feeling reinvigorated and more alive because that's what that conversation did for me. Like, that's different. And so like listening and paying attention to what feels good to us is a superpower that we can apply to all aspects of our life. And sex is a way to get more in touch with that. Like, just because it's so by nature around oriented to what feels physically good. So I basically think that our culture has made it feel very risky to engage in pleasure because there's this story that guilt is like the tool that we use to keep us in check. And if we don't have guilt actively in place, if we're just pleasure forward, then we're like on the slippery slope to hell, basically. It's like, should you get the taste of true pleasure? Why would you ever go to work? Why would you ever be a functioning member of society? Why would you ever choose monogamy? Blah, 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 blah. And like, that is such black and white thinking, right? Like, I believe more highly of people and in people. Like, I believe that experiencing pleasure without guilt is can be an active choice versus like something that happens to us and then we lose ourselves in that. So I'm just kind of like trying to break open the idea that, you know, hedonism is by nature bad. And like that, if it's part of the exploration of feeling good and what good is to you, then that's really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautifully said. And I also think like pleasure from a physiological standpoint is the grounded nervous system, you know, in our ability to be grounded, clear and connected versus if we're not, you know, or we're stuck in a frozen dorsal vagal state where we're foggy or we're not present. Like it can really impact our ability to be present and function. So I see it as like a wellness tool. Pleasure is a wellness tool.
It is. It totally is. And in the last 5 years, like we've seen that people see sex and self-pleasure more as like part of their self-care practice in a way that wasn't really happening when we started Dipsy, or at least was way less part of the cultural conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. So looking forward into the future of, you know, the development of sexuality or wellness, especially looking at things like the influence of AI in this culture. And I recently was reading an article about AI girlfriends and how people can be connecting with somebody through AI and building full-on relationships. I think we saw a lot of that in the movie Her.
Yep.
And some of the arguments there are this is unhealthy, that this isn't okay. Like, what do we, you know, is this going to impact our ability to relate in other ways?
Yeah.
But Dipsy has some audio boyfriends. I think I saw one about a needy boyfriend on there. And so what's your take on this and how do you see that forward and now?
That sort of content is very new to Dipsy. So that's like part of this like TikTok creator category that is, I think maybe less than a year old at Dipsy, maybe 6 months old. Mm-hmm. And was part of we talked a little bit about like reactiveness. Like, we listen to what users want and we try and give them what they want if it's within the confines and boundaries of what we want to produce as a company. And there are all these people on TikTok who have amazing voices and are like creating these really loyal followings who just like love the sexiness of their voice. And that's super aligned with Dipsy, right? Like voice is at the heart of so much of this erotic experience that we create for people. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, okay, like what if we gave people containers to do their thing inside Dipsy, and we help them write their script, but we also like let them do their thing. And a huge part of that like TikTok-y environment is like this playful, like, I'm going to pretend to be your boyfriend, pretend to be your girlfriend thing that people feel not only is really sexy, but feel really comforted by. Mm-hmm. And we felt like, why not offer that to people? Like in many ways, our sleep content does that really well, where you like love a character, like Killian is like one of our classic Irish hunks. And then Killian mm-hmm. in a sleep content can like, I don't know, be puttering around the kitchen or playing the guitar in the other room while you gently fall asleep. So it's like this comfort forward sleep content versus just mm-hmm. purely like you're in a rainforest. Mm-hmm. And so we were already like thinking about content as comfort. And so there's a lot of like beauty here, I think, for even to the idea of like, what is the bar for how I want to be spoken to and want to be cared for, but also just the pleasure of it. Like I like to be talked to in this way. So mm-hmm. do I have like a grand philosophy or thought on like how AI is going to affect our ability to relate. I think it is a magical mystery box that we are just at the very beginning of. And I think that there are going to be good things that come from it. And I think there's going to be bad things that come from it. And like what we hope is that creators and folks like Dipsy, like other folks, recognize that their choices carry responsibility. Yeah. And also that consumers recognize that their choices carry responsibility too. And you know, I'm not one to judge the TikTok scroll. Like I have days where I'm like totally zonked and I'm suddenly like, oh my God, I've been on here for an hour and a half. Like, what am I doing? Like, I know that's not responsible consumption in that moment. And of course we all do that.
Yeah.
But we also just deserve moments to give ourselves the check of like, does this feel good? Because after the hour and a half, like it doesn't feel good, right? Like, and I actually uh-huh. know that that doesn't feel good. So mm-hmm. that's like kind of what I think is important, is like to help reminding people that like what feels good to them is something that they should really like passionately pursue and check in on.
Yeah. Bringing conscious awareness of it. Yeah. And I think too, it's, who are we to judge anybody's route of how they get their attachment needs met or, you know, their internal romantic needs met. As some people, they don't want to have a full-on relationship because a relationship comes with a lot of responsibility too and a lot of other things with it. And so, you know, how can we not judge or segment somebody over here as that's unhealthy, that's bad, you shouldn't do that, but just bring up the conscious awareness of effect.
That's another really good point. And something that we learn a lot from Gen Z, who just generationally blow all of our minds, is that there's a lot of value in like breaking open our preconceived notions on like what something is. So for example, like I talked to a non-binary design school student in Brooklyn, and they are living a much cooler life than me, obviously. And I was asking them about their dating life, and they were like, oh yeah, like I recently slept with a guy in Switzerland. And I said, oh cool, like how was your trip to Switzerland? And they were like, no, like I didn't go to Switzerland, like we had phone sex. And I was like, oh, like phone sex is sex to you, like you think of that as sex. And mm-hmm. they were like, of course I do. Like it wasn't even a question that's sex to them. And that was like so enlightening. I was like, totally. Like I'm actively preaching that like sex is not just P&B every day. Right. But now it's like one level expanded. It's not just like that sex isn't just penetration. Sex also includes foreplay. Sex also includes digital space. Yeah. And like those things are just going to have to be, like we need to stay open to the fact that the world will constantly be changing and definitions mm-hmm. will constantly be getting bigger.
Yeah. And can we be both open to that while also not shaming people who are still in the past definition?
True. Correct. And well said.
I think we saw a lot of that in the pandemic too. Like I really feel like the pandemic was a big breaking open of these sexual curiosities and creativities. And
it was
questioning our own. Yeah.
We did a big state of sex survey. We put a survey out for 7,000 people. A lot of them were Dipsy users, but a lot of them weren't. It heavily skewed towards women and non-binary folks, but we were just curious like how people perceive culture today around sex and how they perceive their own sex lives. And it was crazy how many people said that the pandemic had like a meaningful impact on their sex lives for one reason or another, whether that's like becoming more or less confident in their bodies, becoming more or less, you know, like dysmorphia, dysphoria, becoming like there's so much emerged that now needs to really be reckoned with, because you know, that was a time we all went through it, and it left effects.
It did. It sure did. And even, you know, I didn't think about this until you said it, the stages of the pandemic as well, right? Because we had the beginning where all of us were working out and doing the things. And then by month three, we had eaten all of the carbs and all of that. And we're like, let's just more disconnected from our bodies.
I know. People were like, Dipsy must have had the best pandemic ever. Like, it must have done so well for your business. And we were like, yeah, in the first 3 months, people were downloading it like crazy. And then I think as a natural expression of how people's sex lives were evolving, people were way less interested in sex because they were like so meh for so long. And so we saw this like crazy spike and then kind of like a dip again because, I don't know, building up from my anecdotal experience, like I just think like I was the sleepiest, slowest, most muted version of myself in adulthood that I've ever been, you know?
Yeah. And really to translate that into people's everyday sex lives, to remember that sex and our own turn on is something to be nourished, that we can't just expect it to be spontaneous or be something that's ready at the go. It's like, we gotta feed it, right?
Yeah. And like, it'll evolve over time, you know, like it'll be different in different moments because of age, because of circumstance, because of our relationship, because of hormones, because of you name it, like it'll keep changing. And like, whatever's happening right now is like not the end. And like, it will change again.
It will. And that's something I talk with some of my colleagues who are all sex experts in the world, around periods of time in which their sexual desire dipped, and including my own. And I think that's important for us to talk about too, and normalize that it is something that dips and raises just as in context to life.
Yep. And there's a quote that I will butcher right now, which is like, the worst suffering is suffering that you don't know will ever end. Mm. And I think that really connects to desire too. Like, if you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm like going to live a desire devoid life because this is how it is today, it feels extra painful.
Yeah.
And so remembering that change is inevitable, I think, can be a lot of relief for people that are in a dip, which will happen.
And in the meantime, you can listen to Dipsy and that needy boyfriend.
What helps? We're here for you.
Oh, Gina, this was such a good, fun conversation to have with you. How can people find Dipsy? Where can they find you?
Yeah. So it's D-I-P-S-E-A, like a dip in the sea. You can go to dipsystories.com. You can download Dipsy in the App Store or the Play Store. You can follow us on TikTok and Instagram, Dipsy Stories. Such great content. Highly recommend. And if you want to explore Dipsy for free, we would love to offer 30 days for you to explore before your credit card goes through. So that would be dipsystories.com/sexloveyoga. You'll find that code kind of pre-populated.
Yeah. I'm so excited. And I'm excited to hear from the listeners about your experience. I want to hear which ones are some of your favorites. So be sure to send that over. Thanks so much, Gina. This was fun.
Yeah, so fun. Bye.
Well, that was fun. Thanks for tuning in, lovers. And if you want to experience more ecstasy and sexual liberation, head over to sexlovepsychedelics.com and learn about how you can join me for any one of my online or live events. And while you're there, grab my free guide on sex and psychedelics. Remember, this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Please contact your healthcare provider and local law before pursuing any of the products or psychedelics discussed. And one final note here, I make this show specifically for you. If you're loving the show, then be sure to leave me a review in iTunes or Spotify to let me know. Happy to be here and happy to serve. I'll see you next time on Sex, Love, Psychedelics.